This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay.
I know you're going to dig this.
Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Chicago.
Always streaming on the ESPN Chicago app.
Check this out.
Welcome on in. This is Tyler and Shay on ESPN 1000 with you until 9 a.m. on this Saturday morning. Shay on the road in Indy. Good morning to you. You had a nice night at the concert.
Yeah, I went to Noah Kahan with my wife. We had a good time. Apparently, Indianapolis was as close as he was getting to Chicago on this tour.
How is that the case?
I have no idea.
He's been playing baseball stadiums across America, I feel like.
Yeah, I was really surprised. But, you know, 2.5 hour drive for here in Noblesville, Indiana. I'm currently, Tyler, I'm doing the show from the parking lot of a Holiday Inn Express because there are four people in my hotel room that I don't want to wake up by yelling.
Look at you. Good guy Shay in the morning.
Trying my best.
Considerate of others.
I will say, okay, so like, have you seen those videos of... like, oh, my dad when he wakes up in the morning. And it's just like the loudest human being
in the
world.
Yeah.
I was that guy this morning. Unfortunately that guy. I woke up. I forgot to take my contacts out. So I woke up at like 6:30. Yep. And I was in the most pain I've ever been in. And I'm all stuffed up. And I had to be like a dinosaur. It was horrible.
That's unbelievable.
But I felt bad. So I'm trying to make up for it by being in the car.
There you go. Well, look at you being a good guy here on a Saturday morning. I'm sure it was a late night, but a fun night. And Noah Kahan, Sneaky might be like one of the it people right now in the music world. Like, I don't feel like he gets enough credit for how popular he truly is.
Yeah, I feel like he's definitely one of the it people. It was like a 30,000 person crowd at this amphitheater. I texted Abdallah, or rather he texted me, asking what show I was at because he was at some hardcore thing.
He thought you guys were at the same thing.
I don't know, but I was like, oh, I'm at Noah Kahan. And he said, damn, that's a big crowd. So he was surprised.
Yeah.
But I think it is kind of sneaky, like you said. It's this folk guy, singer-songwriter, and suddenly he's at the top of the music charts.
A lot of young people, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of young people.
Yeah, that's what I figured. All right, let's get into what took place at Wrigley Field yesterday as the Chicago Cubs lost to the Cincinnati Reds 5-4. And it was, in my estimation, the second worst loss of the season for the Chicago Cubs. Just behind the opening game of the San Diego Padres series where they had, I believe it was an 8-1 lead and then squandered it all away. It was actually an 8-0 lead. And then the Padres came back and had some runs, had 7 in one inning and then 2 in another. And then the Cubs end up losing 9-8 in that game. But yesterday, one run loss at the hands of the Cincinnati Reds. And there was so many different places that you could point. And we've seen a few of these lately where it is the perfect microcosm of the Chicago Cubs season in a loss. And we're seeing it happen far too many times at this point. When you look at what took place yesterday, an error on the base paths, well, that makes sense because this team has the most outs on the base paths in all of baseball right now. They passed the Angels yesterday because they had two. And then on top of that, you had a bullpen that let you down once again. You had solid starting pitching, at least good enough to win in this game. But the bullpen lets you down with Drew Smyly letting up a two-run home run. And then Hector Neris letting up a big-time insurance run in the top of the ninth. And there's just so many things that are wrong with this team. It's finally time for Jed to make an uncomfortable move. You have one of the highest-stocked farm systems in baseball right now. People want to talk about having the best farm system in baseball. You don't have the best farm system in baseball by having guys in the top 10 or so. Like, that helps, obviously, but you have the best farm system in baseball when you have a tremendous amount of depth to your farm system, which is exactly what the Cubs have right now. And you don't build that farm system up like that to sit on your hands and watch your team lose in dramatic fashion after dramatic fashion after dramatic fashion. It's time for Jed to make a move. bullpen. The lineup needs a little bit of thump to added to it as well. This team is stuck. It's stuck in the mud right now. They're coming off a month where they played baseball that was just as bad as the Chicago White Sox. Time to make a move and time to move along.
Yeah, I mean, you've been the worst offense in baseball for a month. I'm surprised by some of the reaction from guys like Sylvie and Cap, the longtime Cub yelling fans, that don't seem as panicked as I would have expected, because I feel like it's alarm bell time with the Cubs. And I think you're right. I think prospects are only prospects. I don't know what any of these guys are going to be as players. I can't just hug them forever and hope that they become something good. Like, right now, I feel like you have a chance to win a division. Go get help.
Yeah. I look at... Listen, I'm not asking you to go out and trade Cade Horton or trade Owen Casey or Matt Shaw, three of the guys who are among the best in your system, but find the guys that are in, like, the 10 to 15 range. Like, those are the guys that are movable right now that can go and are good enough to get you a bullpen arm. And you don't even need, like, the best bullpen arm on the market. You need someone to go in there and solidify it. Or, I mean, in the case of a guy like Jorge Lopez, who was DFA'd earlier in the week because of the antics that took place out at Citi Field in the Mets system earlier this week, that's going to cost you nothing. That's going to cost you the scratch-off of all scratch-offs within your organization to go out and make a move on him because he has been DFA'd and you can just jump the line. Something has to give here. And then yesterday, the Willie Harris send. You know, it's funny. I've looked, if you look at the entirety of the year, and I tweeted about this probably a couple of weeks ago, the Cubs have had impeccable play at the plate luck all season long. Think about the Pete Alonso play at the plate and the long review that was there in New York. Think about the Cody Bellinger play at the plate against the Pirates, where, in my estimation, he was out, but it went to review and they called him safe. All of that, it felt like the pendulum was going to swing the other way at a certain point. I don't even think this was a play at the plate luck. This was pure idiocy that was made yesterday at Wrigley Field. You look at the send home by Willie Harris. He takes the slowest runner in all of baseball, by my estimation. I know there's StatCast numbers out there that say, oh, Nick Madrigal's like a 55 percentile sprint speed. I don't care. Watch him run the base pass. The guy runs out of gas after he hits 90 feet. This is a guy who at 5'8", you'd think would be faster. He is far from it. He hits into double plays that aren't even close. He nearly hit into a double play in that same inning on a ball that was fumbled with on the exchange to go from third to second. I mean, this was almost an around-the-horn double play, and he still barely beat it out. Like, everything about knowing your personnel. What do you always hear Stacey King say? KYP, know your personnel? Nick Madrigal's the slowest guy on your team. I think there's bullpen pitchers I'd rather pinch run with. And you're sending him when you've got your best fly ball hitter coming up next with one out and runners on second and third? Inexcusable. It's completely inexcusable that the Cubs are getting away with this on mental errors, physical errors, and just overall lack of living up to the standard that a lot of these players have set out for themselves.
Can I ask you something? Why is Nick Madrigal on the team?
He shouldn't be.
Because...
And listen, in all fairness to Nick Madrigal, yesterday's not on him. Yesterday is 1,000% not on him. That is on Willie Harris. But there have just been way too many situations where Nick Madrigal is tied up in a situation that ends up leading to a Cubs loss.
It's just, I don't understand why he's on the team. And I'm not even blaming him for the loss yesterday. I think the fact that he's here still and not been sent to Iowa or not just been tagged with the DFA, like, enough. He stinks, man. He's a total bust, failed prospect. Like, it's over. We can kind of seal the deal on him. And the idea that he's on this team that I think can win the division bothers me. But in the long run, I think the way that the Cubs have behaved throughout this month, and not that they should have panicked more, made some big splashy move, but just – like continuing to move forward with a guy like Nick Madrigal when you could easily option him out. Man, like, do they believe they can win a division, and do they care enough to try? I genuinely wonder that question.
It's going to be interesting when you get to July. I mean, today's start of June. This is when the trades start to heat up a little bit. In this month, you'll start to see some moves, and it's not like there haven't been trades. I mean, there's been a pretty significant one already with Luis Arraez going from the Marlins to the Padres, and look how that's working out for the Padres. They're shaping up and starting to find a little bit of form as a team. I mean, they got off to a little bit of a slow start, and now all of a sudden, they're in the thick of things in the playoff race right now in the NL that is, for all intents and purposes, pretty bunched up and pretty gettable right now. And whether you're talking about from a wild card standpoint or even in the case of the Cubs in the division, you can look at the Brewers, and the Brewers have had a nice season so far, but the Brewers have also, it feels like, left a little bit of meat on the bone as well in certain situations. They may be 11 games over and the Cubs 2 games under, but this division is not wrapped up, signed, sealed, delivered. This division, even though the Cubs are 6.5 out, is still gettable. I look at some of these other divisions, like the Padres. They're 5.5 back of the Dodgers. They're not catching the Dodgers. The Dodgers are coming off one of their worst stretches of baseball that we've seen really in the last, what, 5-7 years? And the Padres ain't catching the Dodgers. The Braves, 6.5 back of Philly. I don't think they'll catch Philly, but it's the Braves. They've got guys that once the weather heats up, their bats might kick into action. Now, you did lose your best player in Ronald Acuna Jr., but I look at everything that the Phillies have done this year, and boy, they look like they may be the cream of the crop in the NL in a season where we thought it was the Dodgers versus the field.
Yeah, just look at, like, you put the Cubs against these teams. And, man, I know you're only a game out today, but I don't think you're getting in via the wild card. I don't. The way that this National League stands up, I think you're going to have to win your division. St. Louis is starting to turn my head a little bit. Like, that's a team that was supposed to be good coming into the season, had a lot of players. Obviously, last year went sideways, but coming into this year, they felt like they had the ability to get things done, and they kept Oliver Marmol around for God knows what reason, but they're starting to play better ball. Like, you're right, the division's not wrapped up, and my fear is if the Cubs don't make a change here pretty quick, they will be on the outside looking in. Like, they're going to be ending up right about where they are in third place.
Yeah, and they're watching it happen right before their eyes. I mean, there is bad loss after bad loss after bad loss, games that they should be winning. I mean, they're in a grouping right now with a couple other teams for the most blown saves in all of baseball with 12. 12. Think about if you just have that and you put 6 in the win column there. Like, this is something that the Cubs need to fix ASAP. And I do think they can get in via the wild card. Like, the Giants don't totally scare me. The Cardinals don't totally scare me. I think with a couple moves here or there, playoffs are certainly gettable for the Cubs. But the goal should not have been get into the playoffs this year. Sneak in the final week of September into a wild card spot. The goal should have been to go out and win the Central. Because you went out, stuck a knife in the back of the Milwaukee Brewers,
yep,
with your managerial move this offseason with Craig Counsell. And by the way, these mental errors, when is Counsell going to start paying the tax for some of this? I get he wasn't on the field for that individual play yesterday, but Craig Counsell, the entire body of work in terms of base running mistakes, bullpen error, all of this has to start building up on his resume right now, because A, we didn't see a lot of this in Milwaukee, and B, some of this stuff we didn't see with the Cubs either. And some of this has to fall on the shoulders of the manager, because when you're paying a guy $8 million a year to manage your ball club, there better be something happening here. When you're paying a manager like solid reliever money, there needs to be some sort of on-field product that is taking shape that you can say, yep, that is directly related to the guy that we have on the top step there.
Dude, I've been wondering when we can start being critical of Craig Counsell. And I'm not saying, like, oh, launch him into the sun. Like, I'm not trying to run him out of town. It's only been 2 months. But that was the move that was framed as, like, oh, this is the thing that'll get us over the top. We believe in our core. We believe in the pieces that we have. We're going to move on from Ross. Thank you for the memories. Thank you for your service. We're going to go make a big boy move and get a real manager and be a real ball club. It just doesn't look like that. This is not – in the month of May, the Cubs did not look like a professional outfit. They were basically the worst offense in baseball. The fielding errors are a joke. The base running errors are a joke. The relief decisions are a joke. The fact that Madrigal is still here is a joke. Like, this is not a professional outfit right now. And I get that you're only two games under 500?
Mm-hmm.
But, man, that sky feels like it's fallen a little bit.
Well, it's because
the month of May was embarrassing.
Yeah, like, it's because of the way that we've seen it fall, right? It's games that you've got a full grasp on that you let slip through your fingertips time and time again. And yesterday's another example of that. A blown lead, you're up 2-0, then you're up again, and you just see a game that you had at home. This should be the get-right series here against the Reds. This should be against the cellar dwellers of the NL Central right now. This should be the team that you should go out and make some hay, take an easy 2 out of 3 against, if not 3 out of 3, because right now you look at where you're at in your schedule, your nine games, including yesterday, is home against the Reds, home against the White Sox for 2, and then at the Reds for 4. Like, this should be an opportunity for you to go out and make some hay, and you got off on the wrong foot after losing 3 of 4 to the Brewers, after losing 2 of 2 against the Cardinals, after losing 2 of 3 against the Braves, after losing 3 of 4 against the Pirates. Like, this was a very gettable division, and you've made it look extremely hard on yourself.
I think they're 4-14 since that first Braves series, the one that was in Atlanta.
It's
second week of May. I think they were 4-14 since that series, which is horrible.
Yeah.
And they're the worst hitting offense. Like, they don't score runs. It's, man, at least you got those 2 bingo free spaces against the White Sox next week.
Yeah. You're going to
need
them,
buddy.
Yep. They are. All right. If you've got some Cubs thoughts, you want to join us, 312-332-3776. And how about we go to Jerry's teams? A hypothetical for you that we'd like you to answer. We'll discuss when we come back here. Tyler Rocky, Shay Norling with you till 9 on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to Tyler Rocky and Shay Norling. We're back on ESPN Chicago.
Reinsdorf hypothetical in just one moment, but first Sammy wants to talk a little bit of Cubs. Good morning, Sammy.
Hey guys, how you doing? First time caller.
What's going on?
I just want to know like what our catcher situation is going to look like coming towards the deadline. Everyone's running back and forth on us, and offensively these guys just look horrible.
Yeah.
So I want to hear you guys' thoughts on that.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Sammy. Appreciate it. Listen, the Cubs need a shakeup at catcher, too, because Yan Gomes is far from the guy that he was last year. And Miguel Amaya, we've seen some young guys get some opportunities and not flourish right away. Miguel Amaya ain't it right now. I mean, that is a guy who has struggled to the highest degree and may be one of the biggest weaknesses on this roster right now, because A, he can't hit. B, he can't frame or play solid defense. And C, guys are running rampant on him. All of it is something that you cannot have on a day-to-day basis on your roster. In terms of solutions, there aren't many good ones right now if you're trying to find a catcher. But the one that I can get behind right now that's not going to cost you much is Elias Diaz out of Colorado. 34 years old, I want to say, or 33 years old, rather. And it's a guy who is off to a nice start right now in Colorado. Colorado's not going anywhere. He's on an expiring deal, so it's not going to cost you anything to go out and get him. The problem is that not a lot of teams have great catching, but it is a position that is hurting the Cubs right now. Like, in most situations, catching isn't great, but it's not hurting a team. In the Cubs situation, it's hurting them.
Yeah, I feel like catcher is one of those positions that nobody has and everybody wants, and so it's hard to find them at the deadline. But, dude, it's hard to find a worse battery than what the Cubs have been putting out with Amaya and Yan Gomes.
Right, like usually you have a guy who can't hit, but he's good defensively. Cubs don't
have a Martin Maldonado.
Right, like, but they don't have that. They don't even have a guy who's good defensively, a professional catcher right now. And it, you know me, Shay, I am the leader of the Yan Gomes fan club.
Yeah.
He ain't it this year. He has been atrocious defensively at the plate. He can't do anything.
I'm surprised by your flip on this. I thought you would have been the band on the Titanic and gone down with the ship.
How do you defend what he's doing? You can't.
You can't.
It's pitiful.
How does Sylvie defend Madrigal? Sometimes you just got to be the band on the Titanic.
Sometimes you got to wear it. It's the catching position's a mess right now, and they need to do something. They do, because there's no help coming in the short term, minor league wise. There's no one you can really bring up. Like, there's a major hole at catcher right now on this team, and it's maybe one of the most glaring. And it's losing them games. When you see the way that these relief pitchers are getting run on, it's losing them games. Guys are getting put into scoring position, or the pass balls or wild pitches that should be blocked. It's losing them games at this point. You got to find a way to work out of this. All right. You presented me with a dilemma, or a hypothetical, rather, for Jerry Reinsdorf's teams, the Bulls and the White Sox.
Yeah, I was thinking about this a little bit this week, and I think it's fascinating. We got two guys in Chicago sports who I believe have more than earned a pink slip, and neither of them are fired. And it's, like, shocking to me, this idea that Arturas Karnišovas and Pedro Grifol are keeping their jobs at the point that we're at. Arturas, you know the deal. Like, he's just never done anything. It's been, what, a year and a half since you traded for a player? 2 years? Since you moved a human being?
Yeah.
It's been that long? Like, you aren't doing anything. You're not signing high-quality free agents. You're not finding savvy ways to subvert the salary cap. You haven't traded Zach LaVine. You're doing nothing, and you aren't making the playoffs, and you aren't picking high enough for me to care about you in the draft, so you're stuck going nowhere. And it's been that way basically since the Vooch deal, which was the big woohoo, we got a guy in here who's going to do something and bring the team forward, things are feeling good. Everything since has been sit right in the middle and do nothing. And it's been long enough, man. Like, we see what it's going to be under AK. It's time. Grifol, on the other hand, with the White Sox, I just find it interesting. They both work for Jerry Reinsdorf, is a guy who any other serious organization in baseball probably never would have hired in the first place. But at this point, every serious organization in Major League Baseball would have launched out of an effing cannon. He would be gone in any other market in this league. They are almost 30 games under 500. It's unbelievable what's going on. They haven't hit 50 losses, and they're almost 30 games under 500. Really think about how bad that is. Yeah. They're horrible. This guy has to go, because this season you're going to bring up kids like Colson Montgomery. Brian Ramos will be back. You've got some other kids in this system that you want to see and develop and play. They can't walk into a clubhouse where Pedro Grifol is being disrespected by everybody in there, and it's just like, you can't bring the kids into that environment. I can't accept that. So I wanted to ask the people, 312-332-3776. I'm giving you my cannon. You can load one of these guys in. Yeah, the Shea cannon. You can load one of these guys, but only one of them, AK or Grifol, into the cannon and launch them to the sun. This is your opportunity.
For me, my answer is pretty easy.
Because you're not a White Sox fan.
Well, no. It has nothing to do with either of the teams, really. I'm launching AK. because I've seen teams win championships with bad coaching. And I think managerial issues aren't as critical in baseball as they may be in other sports with coaching. I think baseball managers impact the game less than other coaches in other sports. You don't win championships with bad front offices. You just don't. And that's what the Bulls have right now. The Bulls have a bad front office. The White Sox are poorly coached. But if you are a good enough team, you can overcome poor coaching. You can't overcome a bad front office.
How much do you buy Chris Getz?
How much do I buy? I think right now, like, Chris Getz made enough moves this offseason to... Listen, they weren't going out and signing big fish this offseason. They are in a full-blown rebuild. They told you that by their actions. And they're going to continue to tell you that by their actions this upcoming offseason. I think he's handcuffed, for sure, in terms of what he's allowed to do right now. And I don't know if that's going to necessarily get better. I think Chris Getz wanted one of 30 jobs that's out there as being a general manager of a baseball team. And that's fine. I just don't think the ceiling's very high for him right now. We'll see. Ultimately, this rebuild, like, we probably won't see the Chicago White Sox be respectable again for at least 5 years. At least. Because that's what it sort of takes to build a team in baseball. And Chris Getz is going to be around for it all. It's going to come down to the guys that he goes out and acquires in trades when he has to part with some of these pieces, like some of the guys that are on short contracts, like your Fetties, your Flexins, all that stuff. And I think ultimately he's going to have to trade Luis Robert. It may not be this season, but at some point down the line, Luis Robert is going to have to be traded, and that's going to have to be your big trade chip that you're... I mean, listen, the Cubs got some nice pieces back via their big stars from the 2016 team, whether it was Baez, Bryant, all that stuff. But some of the other guys that you got came in smaller moves, guys that you had on short-term contracts and all that. Like, David Robertson got you Ben Brown. It's not that hard for the White Sox to go out and find a David Robertson and flip him at the deadline for their equivalent of a Ben Brown.
Well, that's been my point with the White Sox this whole season, and that's also why when I look at this specific thing, like, for me, I would also launch AK. It's much easier. I'd have more fun loading him into the cannon and igniting it. But a part of it is because of what you said. Like, the White Sox, I think, regardless of who's in that dugout, are screwed for the next 5 or 6 seasons anyway. And as much as I want to, like, not bring Colson Montgomery into a bad environment and potentially ruin his development by bringing him here with Pedro Grifol, who I don't think is good. I don't want to be too harsh, but, like, they're still going to be bad. And the likelihood that Colson Montgomery is going to be here when you're good with the trajectory that you're on, I think is like 50-50 right now. So I think AK gets you a little bit more immediate change, I would hope. I think Grifol firing, everything kind of would feel the same on the south side, except maybe you'd be more confident in the development of the young guys.
At the end of the day, you've got an owner that is handcuffing both franchises right now. And it feels like in the situation for AK, he was given a $20 allowance right out of the gate. Because remember, that first offseason, he was active.
Yeah.
He was moving and shaking. He signed Lonzo. He signed DeRozan. He signed Caruso. And, I mean, the DeRozan and Caruso signings were good. And the Lonzo signing looked good until the injuries. And it looked like, maybe this guy knows what he's doing. We were talking about AK in a very similar fashion that we are talking about Jed at the beginning of this season. And also, to a degree, Ryan Poles, too. Like, we were talking about AK in that same vein earlier in his tenure because of the moves that he made. He shook things up. He went out and made the trade for Vooch, which was a, all right, let's start to become serious move. But it feels like he let all the water out of the tank early. And after that, it's been nothing. And it feels like Jerry gave him $20 when he started and said, don't spend it all in one place. And what did he do? He spent it all in one place, and now the faucet's turned off.
Yeah, all the eggs were in one basket, as people like to say, with the Vooch deal. Like, that was either going to work, and the Lonzo deal was going to work, or the whole thing was doomed to fail. And that's, we're kind of in the doomed to fail. But it's so odd that, like, because you're right, 3-4 years ago, AK was thought of as one of the more promising executives in all of basketball. And it felt like he was really doing a good job of rebuilding the Bulls and the activity level. And it's like 3 years later, he's a clown? Yeah. Boy, what a fall from grace.
Yeah. 312-332-3776. If you want to join us, you get to launch one. You're firing up the Shea Cannon. You get to launch one. AK or Grafal, who is it? We'll get more of your answers when we come back here. Tyler Aki, Shea Norling with you on ESPN 1000.
This is Tyler and Shea.
Tyler and Shea. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Welcome back to Tyler Aki and Shea Norling. We're back on ESPN Chicago.
It's been a good offseason if you are a wide receiver looking to get paid in the NFL. Not named Justin Jefferson, but pretty much everybody else, it's been a good offseason. We saw another couple of extensions over the last week and change, Shay. Nico Collins getting $24.5 million a year from the Houston Texans, and then Jaylen Waddle getting about $28 million a year from the Miami Dolphins. The clock is starting to tick now, and I think a lot of Bears fans are wondering, all right, what's this going to look like for not one, but maybe two guys on their roster in Keenan Allen and DJ Moore? I'm looking at the way that the receiver market is shaking out right now. I think that because of the way we've seen receiver contracts inflate, there's no doubt in my mind Keenan Allen is one and done with the Bears.
You think so?
Yeah,
still?
Yeah. That's a lot of money you'd have to pay him.
He's going to be a fascinating one on the market, though, man, because he's older. He doesn't play full seasons. I think there's more risk inherent with signing him. Like, could I see him get 2 for $55? Maybe. But that feels even crazy to me that we're talking about that much money for a wide receiver of his age for 2 years. I feel like there's a chance he comes back because I just don't see him as being like the crown jewel coveted prize that guys like Jaylen Waddle, but I mean, when Nico Collins is getting paid this kind of money, it is kind of tough. Then again, younger. Mm-hmm. The DJ Moore thing's fascinating. Let me ask you this. I was thinking about this the other day. Is there any chance that this wide receiver market inflating the way it is right now is sort of the NFL's version of the NBA's summer 2016? If you remember back, the salary cap in the NBA went up more than expected. They were projecting future media growth. They thought they'd get all this money. Never happened. Not that the NFL won't grow that way. But when they got that first cap bump in the NBA, it was like Otto Porter's getting $130 million. Yeah. Every wing player in the league is suddenly on these crazy max extensions. I feel like the NFL this offseason, with the 15% spike in the salary cap, teams are just willing to take the bonus money they've been given and lock up some of their guys. And the price has been driven up, but I don't really know if I believe it's going to stay here with wide receivers. Quarterbacks are what they are. They're going to cost $60 million. It's a matter of when. But, like, I don't know if I buy that every wide receiver in the league is suddenly a $30 million player.
I'm with you. The amount of receivers that we see from every which round that come out and produce at high levels for you is astronomical. I mean, we've seen it with guys like Davante Adams, Stephon Diggs, Puka Nacua last season. Like, these guys come from everywhere. Tank Dell, they come from everywhere and go out and give you tremendous production. And I'm looking at I'd be curious if we could hook up Ryan Poles to a little bit of truth serum here and ask him how much of the Roma Dunze pick was belief in talent versus you got to be young and cheap at the position. Like, is this slowly turning into a bit of a running back conundrum where, and listen, I think receiver is still more important than running back, but you can find those guys kind of anywhere at this point. Now, Ryan Poles has to show that he can find guys anywhere. So that's part of it. But in terms of, I'm not willing to pony up big money to go out and get a guy because I can get a guy for younger and cheaper and maybe even better.
I'm sorry I'm laughing. I'm just thinking about this as like, the NFL is becoming the league where, oh, that guy's going to turn 30 one day? No, thank you. Please go away. Like, it's just, we're never going to get to second contracts in the NFL anymore at this rate.
Every GM is Leo DiCaprio.
We're going to, once my running back turns 25, I can't have a relationship with him anymore. Get out.
That'll be all.
Wide receiver, 26 years old. Get out. Dude, that feels like where it's going with the amount of money that's going to start being invested in quarterbacks. If they really become $60, $70 million players, and that's the way that I think we're headed, you're not going to be able to have multiple $30 million receivers, barring the cap shooting up a bunch. So at some point, we are going to be like, wait, receivers on these huge contracts, it's kind of not worth it. Maybe we should just go young at the receiver position, and we will have running back too.
The thing about the difference between the receiver and the running back is this, though. The running back, you see the production start to decline, usually, once they get to that second contract.
Firm number.
Right.
Like, literally age 25, they're dead.
Receiver, though, that's not necessarily the case. Receivers are still very good, if not even improving, past that first contract. It's just, how much do I want to pay these guys when I know I can get something maybe not as good, but could be as good in a year or two? Why wouldn't I do that as opposed to pay a guy 30? I mean, by the time we keep going, it'll be 35, 40 million. And that's why the Justin Jefferson and the Jamar Chase contracts are going to be so interesting, is because that's going to set the bar for a lot of these future receivers. And we know these markets at every position, they get reset, it feels like, every single offseason. So,
yeah, I got news for you. If you think A.J. Brown or Justin Jefferson are taking less than the $32 million that A.J. Brown got, you got another thing coming. What is the Jefferson deal going to look like, you think? 35?
I was going to say like 37, 38. But it's,
good God,
I don't know if it's coming from the Vikings, because we've heard things about how they do business and that they don't like guaranteeing money past the first season. And if I'm Justin Jefferson, I'm not jumping for that. Like, that has to be, if the Vikings don't take care of Justin Jefferson, then they're going to be set back to square one. And they may look at it as, you know what, he ain't Justin Jefferson, but Jordan Addison was pretty good last year and maybe can develop into one of the 5-7 best receivers in football. And that's, hey, listen, maybe the way they look at it.
That's the way they looked at it when they had Diggs, and then they saw Justin Jefferson and were like, oh, wait a minute.
Like, it worked out.
This is how they've done business forever. So it wouldn't shock me, like, if Jefferson gets his money from someplace else. I can't believe we're in the race to $40 million at the receiver position. And again, like, the actual money value doesn't matter. It's about the percent of the cap, and it's about the real cash. The actual AAV number that we see isn't really the thing, but it is just, there's sticker shock in seeing $40 million potentially next to a wide receiver.
And the other thing about it, too, as we see the number get bigger and bigger each year, the viability of franchise tagging one of these receivers becomes less and less appetizing to a team, especially if you do not have a quarterback on a rookie or team-friendly deal. It's just not going to be in the cards. I mean, I'm going to be very intrigued what this wide receiver franchise tag number is next year, because it's going to shoot up in a tremendous fashion once Jefferson, Chase, Lamb, once all those guys get their money. This number is going to be astronomical, and it's going to be one that a team can't make.
I wonder if the tag on a receiver is going to be something like $31 million.
It might. I mean, right now, Right now, it is about 22. It's 21-8 right now. It's going to go up significantly from there because you're going to see, I mean, just the deals we've seen handed out already this offseason. It's going up. The price has gone through the roof. And at some point, this bubble's going to pop with these receivers, and you're not going to be able to fork over the money that you want or need to go out and pay them what they are asking for.
So would you pay DJ Moore today? Not today, but, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Before the season starts, you're paying him because you want to outrun this.
Yes. I want to get that done with as soon as possible because it's going to age nicely if you can get it. I mean, where do you think DJ's number is? If I had to guess, 27? Probably.
Oh, more than that.
You think so? You think it's going to be more than Jalen Waddle?
No, but I think it's going to be about the same as Amon-Ra St. Brown, so you're looking at 30. I think it'll be more than Nico.
You think it'll be more than Jalen Waddle then?
Oh, I thought you asked A.J. Brown. Like, I don't think it's going to be more than A.J. Brown. Yeah, I think he'll get more than Jalen Waddle. Why wouldn't he? He's got 2 years left on his deal right now. Like, they don't have to sign him. The fact that he's sitting down for a conversation, I think, would mean he can ask for a little bit more because he's probably giving up future money by taking the deal now. I think, like, if you want to pay DJ Moore today, you're paying him $30, $31 million.
Interesting. I just look at Waddle as someone who is younger and also as a second option on the team is giving you about as good of numbers as you could ask out of a second option. And
part you just said is like, if DJ Moore sits down and goes, why am I making the same as him? He's there too. I'm your one.
Then I pull out the birth certificates and say, look, this is why.
Yeah. Let's get some carbon dating done on you.
Yeah.
And then we'll find out who earns more money.
Right. I don't know if he'll get quite what Jalen Waddle got. I would guess maybe he gets the same because his production has been better. But I also look at, if I'm the Bears, you've got Roma Dunze, you've got a quarterback who they're going to have to be strategic with it and sort of thread the needle where it's going to have to be up right around when Caleb is going to get his big payday. You're going to need that last year of DJ Moore's contract to be something that you can still stomach when you have to pay Caleb Williams. Because if you're making a move right now, you have to always have in the back of your mind when you're Ryan Poles, every single move is, I drafted Caleb Williams because I think this is going to work, and we have to tailor our cap accordingly.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, when we come back, there is a war that is brewing up in Chicago right now. That is turning its civilians against each other.
Uh-oh.
It's getting bad out there. We'll discuss when we come back. Tyler Aki, Shane Orling, with you till 9 on ESPN 1000.
This is Tyler and Shane.
Tyler and Shane. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Welcome back to Tyler Aki and Shane Orling. We're back on ESPN Chicago.
Jack McGrath for producing today's show. By the way, shout out to Justin Pottinger's brother down in Lexington for the College World Series, the Lexington Regional. So good luck to Indiana State down in Lexington.
Let's go.
We're rooting for Adam Pottinger. We're big Adam Pottinger fans on this show. So
of course.
Best of luck to the Sycamores down there. All right. There is a war brewing up in Chicago. I think it's been going for a couple years now. This is my first experience with it. Renting an apartment in the city is maybe the hardest thing in the world at this point. The most difficult thing you can do. And I've been looking for a new apartment, and you're going on these tours. And when I first started renting apartments, going on these tours and stuff like that, it was just you. It was you and, like, if you had roommates, it was you and the roommates looking at all these different places now. Now when you show up, there's 10 groups. It's like a open house at all of these things at this point. And you're going on these tours for apartments that are probably already are already like rented and you're just going as a backup application effectively at this point, it's impossible. You cannot win right now in trying to rent an apartment in the city. I have gotten so stuck. I think I just have no choice but to stay where I'm at. I may have to live there the rest of my life, Shay. It's gotten to that point. It is so absurd to try to find an apartment in Chicago right now that I may have laid my lot in life, and I'm living in the same place the rest of my life.
What you need to do at these open houses where there's all these groups or other people is you need to just start laying down the law and saying, we are fighting perhaps to the death in this room over who gets the apartment.
But here's the problem. You go to these open houses, which aren't open houses, by the way. They're tours. They're supposed to be like small group tours that all of a sudden 20 people come pouring into a 900 square foot apartment. It's like a college house party, and you're walking into these things, and it's effectively already rented. You're playing for second or third place at that point. And it's just like, hopefully the people who have the inside track on this thing, like, move to Montana or something out of emergency, and that's the only way you're going to end up with this place. Because all of these places are, like, pre-rented, effectively.
What is the point of putting on the tour if you've already rented the place out?
I don't know.
These people just... No, listen, the word I want to say, I don't think I can say. But these people just like making a muck out of my friend Tyler?
That's what they do. They like to waste my time. And listen, I'm the sucker for it. I go in knowing I'm playing for second or third place. And I do it anyway because it's just so impossible right now to go out and try to find an apartment. You can't do
it. Are you solo renting or do you have a roommate?
No, I'm moving in with the same roommate that you know, Danny.
All right.
So... It's been tough sledding. I think he's found one apartment that he's gone on a solo tour for, where it's just been him, and that one was already like gone. It was gone. Like he went on the tour basically to just go on the tour, just to see the ball go through the net one time, and it was the biggest waste of time.
I'd be furious. I would be furious at the realtor, at the landlord, at everybody involved.
You effectively have
doing this to me.
You effectively have to blind rent at this point. You don't even get to see it. The second you see this thing pop up on Zillow or apartments.com or whatever, you just have to fire. You have to fire from the hip, and you get what you get, and you don't get upset. That's what you have to do.
That's how my wife and I got our first place when we were moving here from Michigan, was blind renting.
It's a crisis out there.
It's the only way.
That's going to do it for us. We'll talk to you next week. The CDGA Golf Show is coming up next.
This is Tyler and Shay.
Tyler and Shay. I know you're going to dig this.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.